You're listening to This Naked Mind with Annie Griss.
All right. Welcome, everyone. I am Coach Cole, filling in for the incomparable Annie Grace, and welcome to This Naked Mind podcast. Today, I'm here with Rebecca. And Rebecca, it's so great to have you here. So great to be here with you.
It's so great to be here, Cole. It's been quite a journey, and I'm so happy to come on and share with you. And I'll say it anyway. I was, just wanted to give my gratitude to Annie and This Naked Mind, and of course, all the lives that have been changed, including mine, just so such transformative work. And so I'm just thrilled to be here with you. And so let's do this.
Yeah, absolutely. So why don't we just get started? I want you to take me back to the beginning of your alcohol journey.
Okay. Well, for me, it started quite young. I'll preface it with, I did not grow up in a household where there was alcohol. So it wasn't like I was around it or my parents drank. It was the opposite of that. But I was in junior high school, so young. I want to say I wasn't even 13, maybe 12. And I did, and this was in the early 70s. And so the climate at that time was things were starting to become very free. And that whole kind of hippie era was coming in after the 60s. And I have an older brother and two younger brothers. I was the only girl in a Mexican-American family in Los Angeles. My mother was first generation Mexican-American, and my father migrated as a young man to the States, and that's where he met and married my mother and raised us there. But I bring that up because at that time, like I say, there was some freedom in the air. That's the only way I can put it, because I remember that even a few years later in high school, we had like open campus where we could come and go as we pleased, which now, seems kind of crazy to me, but I'm even going to go a little bit before high school. So this is junior high school. And I really wanted to go to this slumber party. And there was about eight little girlfriends. And my mother had never really let me do that. And I begged and begged. And she finally, said that I could go. She knew the friend and the other girls that were going to be there. And so I guess she felt it was okay. And I remember there were definitely older brothers, maybe even college age brothers, that somehow a six pack of beer, I remember, showed up at this slumber party for us girls to, I guess, try, whoever wanted to. And I remember being one of those kids. I knew that I wanted to try this. I was always super curious, kind of free spirit myself. And some of my older cousins and siblings that were like maybe 17, 18, I would hear them talk about stuff. And so I think I just wanted to be maybe kind of cool and grown up and show that, I don't know that anybody knew I had never, drank alcohol before. But I also remember it was those huge cans of Old English 101. I mean, I don't even know if they make that anymore. But what I remember, Cole, was at first feeling that fuzziness and feeling kind of, ooh, and I kind of liked it because I remember not feeling insecure. I remember feeling, you're kind of like outside of yourself, you numb what's going on. And I guess in that moment, I kind of liked that feeling. But what I remember next, and I couldn't tell you how much I drank. I don't even know if I drank the whole can, but you have to remember I'm like 12. So the little girl body is not used to this poison flooding in. And I remember the room spinning and not even being able to walk and kind of like crawling down the hallway to the toilet. I still have flashbacks of that and being so sick. And I don't even know if I just crashed. I don't even know where I felt, ended up falling asleep. But the next morning was Sunday. And as a family, we always had to go to church. And so my mom came to get us, me and my cousin. I was so hungover. I didn't even know what a hangover was, but that's definitely what it was. And I just remember that feeling of, you're just holding back the vomit and you feel awful. And of course, I don't want her to know. So here comes the secretiveness of all of it. And you would think I would learn my lesson, but in high school, probably the following year, I remember after like football games and things like that, there was always like the party to go to. And there were always like keg parties. There was always a huge keg in the middle of the party, or we'd get into other parents' liquor cabinets, and just try whatever. And I did that all throughout high school. There were times where I don't think I ever like did blackout drinking, but definitely, we're spinning rooms and this kind of stuff, or at to go hear music, live bands, at any dance. There was just always booze, So that just kind of continued on. And then in college, I was probably drinking the same kind of way, and I met someone and got married, and I was young. I think I was 20, 19 or 20. And he was older by about 5 years. And so, of course, I could go everywhere. Nobody ever carded me. And so drinking was part of our social life, and it was part of what we did. And then I had a son a year later, and that marriage ended like within like 2 or 3 years. So then I found myself like 24 with a 3-year-old. There was a lot of shame attached to the divorce because no one in the family got divorced. And it was kind of the messages, and I'm sure nobody did it to be, cruel or mean, but the messages that were given were more like, your feelings don't matter as much. What matters is appearances. And it doesn't matter like what's going on type of thing. You just don't do that. Well, I did that. And so I drank, I think, to kind of just mask the sadness, the judgment, all of that. And so then I had to get a job because I was a single mom, and before I was in school still. So I kind of had to switch out and become responsible that way. And so I was. And that was one thing, even though I would drink many times, but even binge, binge drinking, that probably was a little bit older, but I'm thinking right now, like in my 20s to my mid 30s, drinking was always part of the social life, part of happy hour, part of going out. A few years later, I fell in love and remarried, and I'm still married to that husband. We've been married almost 40 years now. But again, raising young children, I went back to art school. I was working full time in finance. It was the messages of you do it all. You're a woman, you can do it all. You can have the family, have the marriage, have the career, of course, something's going to give, but you don't know that when you're going through that. You're just, going through it. And then for me, there was a lot of numbing of disappointments, or again, I never learned how to express, because I never wanted to make waves. I did not like confrontation. I would shy away from that. I was not good at that time of probably really setting boundaries for myself, or really putting myself first. I didn't even think like that. I didn't have those awarenesses. It was about, being a mom, being the best mom I could be, being the best, whatever my career was at the time. And in the back of my mind, I always still dabbled in art because that was what I always felt was like my true calling. So then I'm just, so that was pretty much life. I did go back to art school in my mid 30s. And then I even started freelancing as a textile and fiber artist in Los Angeles, and was around that art scene. And again, all the substances are there for, for the taking. And I very much was, jumped onto that because, again, I think it was just to feel good enough to not feel, maybe even just to not feel. And I know this now, looking back, but at the time I didn't realize that's what I was doing. We had a daughter, and so then I was raising a family. And because I had my children young in my 20s, by the time I was 45, they were of college age and they were both up and out. And my husband and I, we moved from California to the Texas Hill Country, and we were kind of empty nesters. And I kind of had this attitude of, oh boy, I didn't have to like kind of watch what I was doing around the kids. Even though, they still see you. You think you're controlling things, of course, but I'm sure there were times that were, that weren't good during those 20 years before. But there was never anything like a rock bottom for me. So like I never had a DUI. I could have, I probably should have many times, but I just, that didn't happen to me. I never like missed work or missed a deadline or, responsible that way, right? Even going to work feeling like crap, right? Because of the night before, but I was there. So it was like I took pride in, oh yeah, I could tie one over, but I can also, perform. So fast forwarding to this kind of new chapter, no kids at home, just my husband and I. And I remember kind of giving myself permission to kind of be that wild child again, and kind of an attitude, not so much in my day-to-day, but kind of my attitude, I think, was that. And we got very much, or I did, into the wine pairing and the wine culture. Because before that, it had been kind of whatever, mixed drinks, vodka, gin and tonic, whatever. But in my mid-40s to my mid-50s, it was all about wine. Kind of became a wine snob. Everyone around me, that's what we did. And we would go on the what they call wine trails, right? You're going to all the wineries, you're just drinking all day. And it got to the point now where I was at the habit of opening up a bottle of wine every evening. And at the time, I wasn't paying attention as to how much I was drinking. But by the time I was in my mid-50s, it was easily a bottle a day, sometimes more. And many times, after that bottle would be gone, I would get into whatever we had in the house. So if there was tequila or if there was vodka, it was like I would find myself swigging the bottle. You know what I mean? Just like, because the wine was gone now and it might be late at night. And I was like, you're not even thinking. I remember doing that. And like the next day, well, you go through all that. Like, what in the hell? What are you doing? Feeling awful. But not stopping it. Like every day at 5 o'clock, I would start again. And I started to know, oh, and it was causing problems too, because in my marriage, because I had got to the point where now I was sneaking. I didn't want it to be known how much I was drinking. So for some reason, I thought a bottle a night was acceptable. And because I had been drinking for decades, but daily like that for at least one decade, it was taking a lot more of the liquid in order for me to even start to feel whatever it was I was kind of wanting to feel. And so, what used to be like a glass of wine, maybe two, where I'd start to feel the fuzziness and the buzz coming on, I wasn't feeling that anymore. So it would take almost a whole bottle for me to begin to feel whatever it was I thought I was wanting to feel. And that's why I say I think then it would get to the point where I was almost it was almost like its own entity. It was this sneaky thing I was doing. When my husband would bring it up to me that I was over drinking, or was I over drinking, or he might find a bottle somewhere that, you know, just the signs. And I would get very defensive. And it was like the one thing that no one could tell me, you know, like, if you think I'm drinking too much, I'll show you what drinking too much is. You know, it was like that rebel girl would come out. And at the same time that all of that was going on, and I would say for about a good 15 years of this, I was also really deeply seeking for deeper meaning in life. And I was doing a lot of reading and a lot of soul searching and asking the universe and meditating and prayer, whatever you want to call it, for answers, because I knew that this wasn't good for me. And I knew that it was almost at the point where I felt like it was tempting me when I was intoxicated to drink more and to almost egg me on, almost as if it was its own, like I say, entity, its own spirit, its own living thing. I don't know how else to describe that. I don't know if you can even relate to what I'm talking about, but it was like me and the alcohol, and we were like this, right? And it would be like, it could get very dark. It could get to where, well, it doesn't matter anyway, you may as well, you know, those thoughts, you know, would come up. And I remember I came across during that time, like Deepak Chopra and Gary Zukav, and was reading Rumi's poetry and works, and was even, you know, just all this stuff that was so enlightening and so beautiful, and it was really calling me, but I was still drinking very heavily. And I was coming home, I want to say it was about, I always do this by age because I finally stopped drinking at 60. But so I was probably 57 or 58. And I had been on a girls' trip in the beautiful town of San Miguel de Allende in Mexico. And there was a lot of drinking that went on. I drank a lot. And I remember flying home, and I was alone because we all lived in different cities, so everybody flew off to a different place. I think I was in my second glass of wine on the plane, of course, because, you know, you don't travel without drinking. And I must have been Googling, you know, what's too much, you know, or how do you know if you're drinking? I don't think I Googled, am I an alcoholic? I never really related to that term. But I think I must have been Googling something about how bad it is, or how much is too much, or something like this. And I remember reading, as the Google search came up, reading, do you ever ask yourself if you would be happier if you were drinking less? What would it feel like to make alcohol small and irrelevant in your life? And I'm like, whoa, who even talks like this? What is this? And I clicked on it. And then just all these articles started coming up. And then I saw the name Annie Grace. I'd never heard of her, didn't know anything about her, didn't know anything about this naked mind. But it set such a fire in me and such a spark that I was just like engulfed. And I kept reading until we landed. And I even downloaded the book on my iPad, I remember. And I was so intrigued. And I got home and had a glass of wine. And but it was stuck with me. It like really stayed with me. And so it felt different. Like I felt like this is something, but I'm not ready for it. I don't think I need that yet. I started making all the excuses as to why not open that door further, because I was so on it when I first read it, but now at kind of time in my old habits and doing the same things. So a whole year passed and my drinking elevated. And so I thought, I'm going to look up this Annie Grace again. And I did. And I saw something about, I think it was Scott's face or something about a 30-day break. And so I immediately looked at that. It was coming up in May of 2020. And so the pandemic had just hit at that March. And, probably like everyone else, there was a lot of drinking going on because everybody was stuck at home and bored and up late watching Netflix and all of this. And so, the wine was flowing. And I remember the 30-day break, and I didn't want to be part of anything. I didn't want my name out there. I wanted to be anonymous. I didn't want to be part of a Facebook group, which is so funny now because this is all I talk about, but I didn't want any of that. I didn't tell anyone. I didn't even tell my husband what I was doing. It was like this was my thing. And looking back now, it's probably because I didn't want peering eyes, or like, what are you, are you really gonna? I just didn't say anything. This was my thing. I did the one where you get the video in your inbox every morning and you get the video. And I loved it and I aced it and I didn't drink through it and I felt amazing. And I was like patting myself on the back and it's like, you go, girl, you don't have a problem. You can stop whenever you want. And the other difference was I was learning a lot because, you learn something every day. So it was like my mind, those paths, the new thoughts, the new things coming to me, the new beliefs. So I thought, oh, this is great. I've got this covered. I'm going to moderate, It was never in my mind that I was going to live an alcohol-free lifestyle. This was like, I've got this. I'll moderate. So June and July, I was moderating. And then something devastating happened in my family that July. And I spiraled. And I really was drinking a lot between that July and that December. It was, again, I hadn't learned the tools of how to properly process. And, it was just back to the old habit of, you do the best you can with the tools you have. And when you're dealing with overwhelming things, I just knew how to do that, just numb again. And it still makes me emotional to think because, so many of us suffer through this, like this cycle. So that December of 2020, we're still in the pandemic, I decided that that was it. It was done because I had had one really dark night where it was me and the spirits again, kind of egging each other on, like who was going to win this war. And so I pulled up Annie. I started listening to all the podcasts where I couldn't get enough. It was so beautiful, just the learning and the understanding that it's really a crazy ass thing, right? I mean, it's not your fault, but it is your responsibility. But I never thought of alcohol as an addictive drug. I knew cocaine was. I knew heroin was, but I never thought of alcohol that way, And of course, it's the accepted drug in our society. So we're not going to think of it that way. So there was another 30-day coming up that January. And I signed up for it. And I didn't know how, but I knew I was done. It was like, I am not, it was kind of like, that's it. Hands up in the air. I don't know what to do, but I know that I'm done. So I need to follow this path. And there was just something so beautiful and authentic about Annie, right? She's just like nothing about her seemed corny or like this is a, it just felt like she was just really speaking from the heart and connecting to mine. And I had no idea about programs. Like, I didn't know she had this whole other thing going on. I just thought it was the 30-day experiment. And I remember about a week in, my husband looked over at me one day at dinner and said, I noticed you're not drinking wine. It took him like 5 days to say something about it. And I just said, no, I'm taking a break. I'm just going to take a break for 30 days. Well, he didn't say too much. He probably didn't believe me. I mean, why would he? had done this before, but I was really into it and learning. And I, like I say, I just couldn't get enough. And then understanding. And then I remembered thinking, wow, I want to be able to do this for other people. If I could, if I really can live a life where I can take it or leave it, and it means nothing to me, and it has no control over me. And it's like, that would be like a miracle, right? So shortly thereafter, after I remember saying that I would love to do what I saw these coaches doing, came the email for the certification. And again, the way I do so many things, like intuition, it was like, I didn't get this in my email box by accident. I'm supposed to do this. I didn't know how I was going to do it. I didn't know where the money would come from to do it, but I just knew I was supposed to do this. So I signed up, and then I got, they set up the appointment. I remember talking to Scott, and yeah, it was just beautiful. Everything was just like, yeah, this is it. And after I was, we get accepted to the institute, then I told my husband what I was doing. And he knows me. I'm just like, this is how I do. This is how I go through things. It's like, no, I'm supposed to do this. And do you know that when time came to pay for it, there was a check in the mail from an inheritance from my father-in-law that we weren't expecting. It was the exact amount that was needed for that. So there was the gift for that. So beautiful. So yeah, so then I was like a fish out of water. I was part of the March. Well, when did we start? February of 21, I guess. You were part of that group, I think. And the learning was so amazing. And all the, just all the brain work and the explanations as to how we're made up and how, alcohol falsely hit the and gives us those dopamine hits, and no wonder we're trying to chase that. And it only lasts, the buzz is only lasting 20 minutes, maybe to 30 minutes. And of course, you want to repeat that, so you go for the next drink. I started understanding, and also that many times we use it to numb difficult things in life, because guess what? Anybody living on planet Earth, we're all going to go through challenges and deep hurts and deep disappointments and, things that you think, how in the world am I going to get through this? But you start understanding that you really need to be in awareness and love yourself enough to learn and to forgive yourself. And I'm sure I've left things out. The other thing that was happening to me before I stopped, that was it. I never drank again. And that's when I started learning that there was like the path and some of these other programs that I had no idea that a lot of my cohorts were part of this group. And so yeah, so I just learned a lot, met a lot of really cool people, did my own learning, did my own researching, just, I'm so curious. So just digging deep into all the science and all the psychology and then the higher consciousness. And I realized that as an artist, I had even was not even creating as much anymore when I was drinking. There was a time I thought drinking made me more creative. I really thought you had to be like this, tortured soul to create. It's just such baloney. But what started happening, Cole, was that my vibrations, alcohol was just numbing my God-given, creative vibrations. I wasn't even, the muses weren't visiting me as often, I like to say. I wasn't painting as much. And now I understand why. It was because that was slowly just erasing me, erasing. My creativity, that essence. And yeah, so it's just so beautiful to, come full circle. And once alcohol was made small and irrelevant in my life, boy, the possibilities and what has opened up and what I'm doing now and just being able to give back, pay it forward. I love it all. Yeah, so that's my journey.
That's beautiful, Rebecca. Thank you so much for sharing that with us and letting folks know too that there's so many of us can find ourselves in the grip of alcohol in so many different ways, right? And
Yes.
you may not have, a rock bottom or DUI or anything like that, and yet you still find this thing that's got a hold of you. And that's that was one thing I was really curious about too, is as an artist, how that affected your creativity and what came out of it beforehand, what came out of it after. And yeah, I do believe there is a lot of folks that, obviously there's art can transmute the pain and we can put our pain into the art, but it also doesn't mean, as you're saying, life is so, it comes at you in so many different ways. There's going to be that anyway.
Yes.
And as an artist, I don't, did alcohol, like, what did it open up for you afterwards in transmuting these things for you into your art?
What it has opened up is I was able to realize that when I was creating and painting, before it had gotten like towards the end of my drinking career, let's say. I would always notice it. I always felt the freest, and like I would lose the concept of time whenever I was putting paint to canvas. And I always felt alive and like that was my safe space. That was mine. No one could tell me it was right or wrong. It was just me to express on canvas. So, what it had done for me. And then I stopped painting as much. I mean, I was even doing like local shows and doing like a lot of really great stuff. And then the drinking just kind of, you become smaller. You become, yeah. So once I kicked booze to the curb and became excited about living like that, which is like a complete turnaround because I would have never thought I would be saying that I happily choose not to drink. I know I can drink whenever I want. We're adults. I buy real. But what's so beautiful is to say, why? Why would I want to numb myself again? And for what purpose? It just doesn't bring me the same joy that I have now. And so what it has done for me is it's allowed me to express through art and also now help others express through art. And it's not just people that are going through the sober curious journey. It's people that even maybe are going through any behavior that is no longer serving them, or maybe they're starting a new chapter in life, maybe a divorce, maybe a new job. For me, being in midlife as a woman, that's like a whole other thing. It's like it's allowed me to tell other midlifers, hey, there's a whole other thing waiting. You might think that after 50, you're done. I'm here to say you put booze where it belongs, which is not in your world anymore. And what opens up, if you really are tapping in and becoming aware and grateful and I don't know. For me, it's like a love thing. Again, this naked mind and Annie and everything that this world is like based on. For me, it comes from this place of love. It's very heartfelt. And as human beings, that's really what we want. We just want connection. We want to know we're enough. We want to know that it's okay. We want to know that anything that we've done in the past doesn't define us. It's in the past. And we could move forward. So it has opened up for me a whole new chapter at this stage in life. And it has also opened up for me to make that an avenue for others too. And that's huge for me because it's part of that paying it forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And following that thread too, I'd just like to ask you if, like, for those that are interested in your coaching or getting to know more about you, how can people find you?
Well, let's see. I'm on Instagram for any creative support or even just support around the sober lifestyle. And my handle there is at Curious on Life. That's the name of my business too, Curious on Life, because that's what happened to me. I wanted to know more about everything. So Instagram there, or and also my full name, Rebecca Guevara Wingler. That's another handle. And then my website is Rebecca Guevara Wingler. And there you can find information for the virtual art workshops. There's one coming up in at the end of April. And I also do one-on-one coaching now. But, I was talking about how I didn't want anybody to know my journey at the beginning. And I was so like quiet and private. And now I also do a podcast, Curious on Life, the podcast, and talk about having a microphone to talk about this wonderful way to live, and it's possible for anyone. And I get to share that message on the podcast, and it's not just around alcohol, it's around aging, it's around social norms for women, it's around ancient wisdom, because I've just become so curious. I just want to learn about all the things. I want to help raise the vibrations of others in this universe. And so that's what it's all opened up for me, Cole.
Yes, that is great. That is great. And just the last question before we finish up. If you were to go back to that version of you, maybe it was that version of you that was, sneaking the bottles of wine, that rebel girl that you talked about. And if you were to talk to her, what would you tell her from your current point of view?
I would tell her to not try to quiet her spirit down. I would tell her to tap into her curiosity and her imagination. And of course, it's easy now at this stage in life to say that, because when you're young, you don't have that awareness. But that's what I would tell her. Listen to that inner you, because I always knew somewhere deep that I was a creator, that I was here to do that. But life and noise and people's opinions and just having to live, many times we forget that. So I would say to her, don't ever forget. Don't ever forget what lights you up and what you love to do from your heart.
That's powerful and beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Rebecca, for taking the time and sharing your story and letting folks know how to find you.
Thank you, Cole. Thank you so
Yeah,
much. Such
it's
an
been an
honor.
absolute pleasure. All
And I'll
right.
see you around, I hope.
Yes, absolutely. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you're ready to see how This Naked Mind can help you on your personal health and wellness journey and want to learn more, go to thisnakedmindpodcast.com to learn what your next best step is. Again, that's thisnakedmindpodcast.com. We have all of our free resources, programs, social links, and more available for you there. Plus, if you have your own naked life story to share, you can submit it there as well. Until next week, stay curious.